Bring on the chefs because we're cooking from home today and have some ideas for you from now, Groundhog Day, until Valentine's Day and beyond, whether you're cooking for one or maybe a romantic dinner for two or feeding the whole family every day. How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it lively? How do you continue to serve the tastes that can run the gamut in your family? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today. Larry's back tomorrow, and joining us in the studio for the next hour, Luke Zahm, James Beard-nominated chef and owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, also host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS. Luke, welcome back to the Larry Mueller Show.
Hey, thanks for having us, Lee.
Also here, Chef Patrick O'Halloran. He is a Madison-based chef who you may know from the old-fashioned on the Capitol Square in Madison, and now the executive chef at the Deliciouser, a spice blending business and restaurant. Chef Patrick, welcome back.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
So I just so happened to have had a cooking class yesterday with my family, and I had a blast. And I'm usually the one who cooks at home for my family every night. And I was trying to figure out last night what made yesterday so much better than what I usually do in my own kitchen. And it's this simple. They cleaned up after me and did the dishes.
Yeah, it helps, doesn't it?
I was like, oh, why was this so such a wonderful experience? Oh, yeah, I didn't have to do a dish.
It makes getting your hands dirty and getting messy that much easier when you don't have to, like, game plan the entire spectrum of the experience.
I'm game planning the efficiency of dishes. Like, I can reuse this dish again. It's not too dirty. It won't spice up everything else.
Yeah.
And I want to invite everybody else into our conversation as we have fun in the kitchen this hour at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us talk@wpr.org. But there is the simplest thing in the kitchen that I can think of to make it a little more fun and a little better is having a little bit of a hand with the cleanup and the aftermath.
Cooking is great when you can do it as a team sport. So my wife always says when she was growing up, she never played team sports. And now that we have a restaurant, she feels like she's finally part of a team. And that goes, you know, the dishwasher is probably the most important person in the whole operation.
Absolutely. I would say, like, I mean, I've been a part of some organizations where chefs were hired first. And then the dishwashers were kind of an afterthought. And it's like building a pyramid without, you know, you're building it from the top down, which, as we all know, does not work.
Yeah.
Those folks are the most essential.
Well, when you say building a pyramid, I was just imagining the pile of dishes that were stacking up from somebody who wasn't doing the dishes.
I mean, we came out of, like, a catering background out of Milwaukee. And the first thing we would do when we get to an event, you set up to break down. Mm-hmm. So we set up the dish station, set up the trash, clearing everything. So the mentality is baked into the cake that you're, let's set this up to break it down.
Ooh, that's a good cooking analogy.
Set it up to break it down.
Yeah.
And that could work
in
the home kitchen as well as it could work as a restaurant or...
Yeah, I don't know if I should tell this story.
Please do. But you should.
I remodeled a farmhouse on the near west side here that's from the mid-1800s and put in all the money went into the kitchen. And it's a big kitchen. But the house is, it's very, we call it kiddywampus. Mm-hmm. It's higher on one side, lower on the other. You put a ball on one end of the kitchen, it rolls down. So the side of the kitchen where I cook is about 3 inches. The counters are about 3 inches higher than the side of the kitchen with the dishwasher. And my wife is, you know, I'm up 6 feet tall. My wife's 5'2", so just kind of, we have our areas, let's say.
But
she did not like that. It works, but I shouldn't even have talked about it. I've stepped in it now.
Yeah, you're going to get heat for this one, I promise.
So that brings me, can a kitchen get too crowded then? Because sometimes there's a chef who would say, you know what, just get out of my way.
Yeah. We're both tiptoeing around that one, too.
When we, like, are switching over from lunch to dinner and there's too many bodies in there, it gives me, like, anxiety.
Yeah.
I can't wait till these guys leave.
Yeah.
But then I was just watching this cooking show, and it was a competition, and they were critiquing some of the cooks, and they said one of the chefs had a guy on his team, and instead of, like, coaching him and making him part of the team, he kicked him to the curb because he screwed something up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that balance of, like, how do you keep people engaged, keep them on the team? But then again, there might be that person in your family. Just get them out of the room, and it'll be way better.
Yeah. I got an Uncle Tim. And
I mean, you know your family.
Yeah,
in front of the television.
Yeah, things will go smoother that way. But there is something, and having had experience in food service, I know that there a smooth service be in the kitchen makes for a great meal, where a bumpy service in the kitchen can destroy you know, what happens at the dinner table. So I'm wondering how you can apply what happens in like a professional kitchen to my own personal home kitchen and make it work.
I'll tell you one thing about restaurants. I always think it's a lot like show business. It's like putting on a play. When the curtain goes up, I still get like butterflies. I love
when
the
doors
beginning
open
of service.
Yeah.
But it's a play where our menu is the script, but there's improv, and you know it's coming. You don't know what it's going to be. There's no, you don't follow the script.
No.
The script is loose suggestion to a lot of people. So even though it gives me that show business vibe, you know, like the script, people go off script regularly.
Yeah, and I think that's like, I would say in the cooking world, that's maybe my strong suit. For a long time.
The audible.
Yeah. Like I, you know, in language that most folks in Wisconsin can understand, like there, I think that there are many different types of chefs. There are some chefs who are technicians, right? And those technicians, I always assign to like the Aaron Rodgers category of Ooh. Chefs, you know, bringing it back to the Packers. Mm-hmm. I definitely am more of a Brett Favre. Like I'll throw the Hail Mary. I may throw a pick off every now and again, but 9 times out of 10, it kind of works out. Cooking with people who are technicians, I drive them crazy. Because like the creativity and the flow and like approaching the food, getting to the table, you know, there's so many areas there where it can be nuanced and you can change and you can grow the idea of what it is you're cooking. But for folks who go in like hard and fast and this is the recipe, this is the formula, we do this and then it gets to the table, you know, I probably...
Well, there's technicians, but then there's people like you who are storytellers.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You sell the sizzle.
I sell the sizzle.
That's what sells the steak right there. But that's really true. And I learned that from this great place, Zingerman's in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mm-hmm. I took some courses there. And, you know, they said, how do you wake up and sell a $20 pastrami sandwich or sell this Hook's 20-year cheddar? You have to tell the story of that because people don't wake up in the morning and think, you know what? I'm going to buy a $50 pound of cheese today.
Yeah.
So you have to connect them.
Yeah.
So the cooking, you know, and kind of the way we cook, we kind of let the ingredients drive it, I think, mm-hmm. a little bit and kind of stay out of the way. Just source good things from here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But, you know, telling the story is very important. And a lot of chefs that are technicians maybe aren't as comfortable in front of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's one of those superpowers that I learned. I mean, I learned from watching you, sir, for better or worse, but I did. And, you know, watching how you can actually affect people's dining experiences by telling the story and why the story has so much power, you know, with Wisconsin Foodie, which premieres this week on PBS, you know, we really find, and it's an extension of your work and legacy. When I was at Lombardino's with you in the early 2000s,
used to work together.
Yeah, yeah, we did. That. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is my guy. This is, you know, you used to say that we cook as if Italians lived in the upper Midwest. And so there was that, you know, always going through different farmers or different purveyors or the, you know, the farmers markets to understand what was in our backyard and create storylines through our menus. You know, with Wisconsin Foodie, it's a matter of like building that cultural identity. Like we are from the upper Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
We are rich in water. We are rich in beautiful, nourished soil. So these ingredients that come from here literally have some of the best value, I think, in the entire planet. And trying to get people to understand and realize, like, you can travel the world by looking at your local farmer's market and maybe buying some, you know, delicious spice blends from a place that would make your food arguably more delicious.
Like the Deliciouser.
That was just one massive setup to get a Deliciouser joke in. I'm trying really hard here.
But also a $50 cheese.
Yeah.
Like, there is something to try there, and there is something to savor, and it does have a story.
It does.
But how do I translate that from my own kitchen to my own kids at the dinner table who have their own tastes, and it seems to center around something as simple as chicken nuggets?
Yeah. Oh.
Dipping sauces.
Yeah.
Oh!
There it is. Start with the honey mustard and work
Tastes
your way
like
out.
Victory dipping sauces.
Which brings us
the recipe is on my website.
It brings us to some of the staples I would think we'd have around the kitchen. And one of them that I come up with very often is a Dijon mustard, because it goes in so much and people recognize it so seldomly when it goes into a marinade or it goes into a dressing. It gives a punch that nobody ever is like, oh, that's mustard you're using there.
Yeah.
It's something that gives it a kind of a some weight to it.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Mustard Museum?
Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah, Barry Levinson.
Yes.
You know, can you share with us, Patrick, on the opening of the Old Fashioned, I remember a story of wanting to have a custom mustard blend.
We worked with Barry on kind of selecting mustards, which led to him kind
the curator of the Mustard Museum, which is, as far as I understand it, the only mustard museum that exists in the United States, North America,
maybe
and possibly.
Maybe the world. It's possible.
It's one of a kind.
I think so.
Well, I got to know him a little bit, and then about 2 years ago, I was a judge in the annual mustard competition.
Oh.
And my favorite part of it was I got to taste 48 mustards.
Yeah.
And then as a gift for being a judge, you get a discount on mustard.
Mustard. I did that gig too.
And my palate was a little burned out by that time.
It was so fun though. Like the Dijon was a whole separate category, you know? And it is, it's one of those versatile ingredients that, you know, a lot of us take for granted, but mustard has so many practical applications. I know specifically in like the vegan cooking world, we use that at the restaurant as our binder. You know, we'll coat the outside of like falafel or what have you with mustard that's cut with a little bit of water. Uh-huh. And then all the delicious breadcrumbs or whatever we're putting on the outside of that thing we're going to fry, that acts as a binding agent, which is awesome.
Yeah, and the mustard seeds we use in the spice blends.
Yes.
A lot of Indian cooking, mustard oils, mustard seeds that we toast and crack. So they bring texture. They bring a little fire to some of these spice blends that we make.
Yeah.
So when we're thinking of the staples that are in your pantries, Chef Luke, at home, in your home kitchen, what are some things that you would not go without?
Yeah, I'm going to play the Wisconsin card here. I've got a really robust cheese drawer. So, you know, I'm always looking for bits and bobs or new creameries or, you know, sometimes I'll have folks ship me cheese because I really want to be able to reflect that in my cuisine, but you know, I'm a scone through and through, so like there's not too many dishes that you can't slip a little bit of cheese into. And I think over the course of our career, Patrick, you and I have been ever so slightly encroaching on that fish and cheese mental barrier.
Whoa.
Like we've found ways to get it in there.
I thought that was a no-no.
Well I
not in Wisconsin.
Our current menu that we're transitioning out of, we were even serving oysters with creme fraiche on top and yuzu. But
creme
you know, we in Italy, you know, being based mostly in like simple Italian cooking for so many years, cheese and fish usually do not mix.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're an American tourist if you're in Rome and you ask for Parmesan on your linguine and clams.
Yeah.
Which is probably spaghetti and clams anyway. but, you know, we do a few things with it. We try to work it in a little bit. But there isn't a day that goes by that I don't eat cheese.
Yeah.
And even my daughter, when she comes to my house, I have no, you know, I have no proteins besides cheese in my refrigerator, and I have no food besides condiments.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have every kind of hot sauce, mustard, olive oil, chili oil.
So these are
oil,
your staples.
Sesame oil.
Uh-huh.
I've got you covered on all the things you might need to put in something, but I don't have the thing.
Right, right.
My grandfather from Kohler, Wisconsin, used to enjoy a sharp cheddar on top of his homemade apple pie.
Yeah.
Nice.
Which I thought was crazy until you try it and get the bite of the sharp cheddar with the sweetness of the apple pie and the crisp of the crust and the cinnamon. Mm-hmm. And that is magical and well worth trying.
Yeah. Little known fact, that was actually a Wisconsin state law, correct?
What?
For a period of time. I remember when we opened up the old fashioned,
we had the cheddar on the pie.
We had the cheddar on the pie because there was a time when the law was on the books in the state of Wisconsin that every piece of apple pie had to have a slice of cheddar. You know, like
someone might want to fact check
that. Yeah. No, just take it at face value. It's fine.
It's the law.
Yeah.
Our guest, Patrick O'Halloran, executive chef at The Deliciouser, founder of The Old Fashioned on the Capitol Square in Madison. Luke Zahm, host of Wisconsin Foodie on PBS Wisconsin, with a new season upcoming, and the owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua. Want to invite you to this conversation and invite us into your home kitchen and what you're cooking or what questions you might have about improving your recipes or pantry. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send us an email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. It's The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and our guest chef, Patrick O'Halloran, executive chef at The Deliciouser in Madison, chef Luke Zahm, owner of the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, and we're talking about home cooking today and what we can learn from their commercial kitchens and you can take into your family's kitchen. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call to join us, or email talk at WPR.org. That's talk at WPR.org. All right, we've got Valentine's Day coming up, which would be a dinner for two, and a way to do it in a way that would be romantic, maybe help with the dishes afterwards if you're not cooking it, and something that is memorable and tells the story. So, Chef Luke, I'd start with you. Where would you steer us towards a Valentine's Day dinner for two?
Are you looking for restaurant recs?
Looking for cooking from home.
Oh, you're looking for cooking from home.
What can
recs?
I do?
Yeah, what can you do? I think cooking from home for Valentine's Day, obviously, when we sit down and we do consultations for folks who are about to, get married, basically, I always ask them, like, what are some of your, like, core food memories? Because oftentimes in the dating world, you go to a restaurant, you break bread together, you connect over that food. And if there's something that really has special meaning for you and your sweetheart, then lean in to that. But with all that being said, cook food that speaks to your values. If you're feeling like hot and spicy, well then, there's plenty of cultures and foods to pull from. One of the things that I love, though, and it's kind of a signature in the way that I approach food, is just if you can find one ingredient that has a storyline.
Yeah.
You're a storyteller.
I'm a storyteller, right? So, I want to find something that, like, really speaks to that moment. I'm going to go hunt down that ingredient and really utilize that ingredient as much as I can in the preparation of that food. So that way, my sweetie knows exactly where I'm coming from.
But my aha moment there, Chef Luke, was the connections food has to memory.
Oh,
how,
yeah.
Like, the smell will bring you back, and how, what your grandma used to cook, if you could just recreate that, it would be like being home again.
Mm-hmm.
Chef Patrick, Valentine's Day.
So we do a dinner. It's going to be the Tuesday before Valentine's Day every year, and it's called If Food Is Your First Love.
Oh.
So we take it course by course, and to your point, one of the courses is going to be a cappelletti dish made with Pleasant Ridge Reserve in the filling and some roasted mushrooms from Vitruvian Farms, local. And that dish I based off of, like, the love of a grandmother, familial love, cooking and caring for people, like, to Luke's point, too, is, find that dish that resonates, because, like you said, smell is such, it takes you right back to a place in a moment.
Yeah, 60% of your flavor profile, your palate, is olfactory based. So if you can sneak those smells in, if it's that rose water and mothballs that reminds you of your grandmother, I don't know. I didn't know your grandma.
But not the dessert I was thinking of, but okay.
I don't know why we're spending so much time on grandma here when we're talking about Valentine's Day.
Well, that first date meal that something that brings you back, but also, continues to tell the story of going forward in a relationship. I really love that idea. Well, let's go to your phones now and your questions for our guests, our chefs, Patrick and Luke, at 1-800-642-1234. We'll start with Carol in Madison. Carol, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. We are often perplexed by the amount of salt and the prepared seasonings like a Lowry's, which we like a lot, but the salt is always first. And if you want more flavor, you have more salt. And so we were just interested in what ingredients can offset not having salt in it if you make your own spice mix.
Well, that would be for you, Chef Patrick, because you make your own spice mixes at the Deliciouser all the time.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had a chance to go to this trade show called the Fancy Food Show, and I met with some other spice companies. And one guy had a giant operation and labels under 24 different brands. He said, I'm in every store in the country. Ask me whatever you like. So I said, you know, we're Deliciouser. We like a lot of texture in our blends. It's chef curated. They're very small batch. We use salt and a little sugar only when it applies to like a rub, a dry rub or something. And I was looking for more equipment for grinding and toasting spices. And his answer to me was, I don't do that. I bring everything in pre-ground, and I mix in as much salt and as much sugar as possible because that's my profit.
Hack.
So a lot of the commercial spice blends that you're going to find are going to be loaded
sugar,
with salt. Salt is that first ingredient. I mean, salt is great. You need it to really enhance flavor, but there's other ways to, you know, enhance flavor in your cooking with acidity, with chili, with, you know, there's different ways you can go with the spices. And so even our signature salt that we came up with as one of our first blends, we now have signature seasoning where we took the salt out because we have friends that can't eat salt.
Sure.
Yeah. But they still want the flavor. So I think I would try to cut back on salt, ratchet up a little bit of spice, a little bit of acid in my cooking. Mm-hmm. What do you think about, you know, cutting salt?
Yeah, you know, like I think to your point, it is it's a matter of nuance, right? Yeah. Different people tolerate salt differently. I'm sure that you're in my palate, and maybe even Lee's over here, after a lifetime in commercial kitchens. Like I like salt.
Yeah.
However. You know, this is something that I tell my young cooks all the time. I don't like it when on the line they premix salt and black pepper.
Yeah.
Because there's not enough control, right? They don't know if they're adding that combined mix. So number one, like if you're looking for spice blends that you can trust, find someone who would make a spice blend that doesn't necessarily add that additional salt. But then number two, you know, I'm really all about people taking that creative risk for themselves. What is it that you love tasting in your food? I remember for a long time, you know, we had different blends that we were using in the kitchen. If it was fennel seed and juniper and black pepper and perhaps a little bit of brown sugar and then a little bit of salt, you know, that for me was like that rustic walk in the forest spice profile.
And I think when you're cooking, especially at home too, taste as you go. That's something we're doing all day. And something we have to remind the young chefs again.
Yeah.
You can taste a dish and one taste, the season, we might add more salt. But then think of the guest who has to eat an entire plate of that.
Yeah. Mm.
So you don't want to oversalt. You want to be just perfect. And I have to shout out Dan O'Connor, our chef de cuisine at the Deliciouser.
D.
He is awesome.
Yeah.
And he has kind of dialed in, you know, the percentage of salt in each one of our blends. Ooh. So when we're doing a Supper Club seasoned steak, we're gramming that out. Like it takes 6 grams of Supper Club seasoning to season a 6 ounce steak. It takes this many grams of Hot Shot to season that ribeye. Mm-hmm. So we've really worked on that. And that's something he brought to the table coming out of great kitchens in Chicago.
Sure.
Is like a little less Brett Favre, a little more Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I was going to say, this dude's definitely a technician.
Yeah. So, but it's awesome because one of the biggest complaints we would get back in the day at Lombardino's was too salty. Mm-hmm. And because you're relying on 6 other cooks on that shift seasoning things throughout the shift.
Down the line.
And everybody's got a different idea, a different size hand, a different pinch, a different taste, you know?
Yeah.
So I admire that about Dan bringing that to our cooking. Mm-hmm. And the thing with me, like 30 years of cooking, I'm still learning and I love it. Like I said, I still get butterflies when the doors open because I know I'm going to learn something new today. I'm going to watch the young cooks just coming out of culinary school to someone like Dan that I work with every day. And I'm always learning something.
Here's a quick question I have. pardon me. Salt grinder. I know the value of a pepper grinder and fresh pepper, but is a fresh salt?
It's a gimmick.
Thank you. I was wondering about that.
Pepper. Whoa.
No. Well, there's. I'm just gonna say, like, you could get a. You can grind the salt.
Yes.
That's a textural thing.
Okay.
You're not gonna make it saltier, less salty,
fresher. Stale.
No. Like a peppercorn, you could toast a peppercorn and release some essential oils. Cracked to. In a pepper grinder, you're releasing that fresh burst of black pepper. But salt, you know, It's a textural thing, like the Maldon sea salt or a fleur de sel.
I got some of that for Christmas.
Yeah, it's great.
It's still
salt. If
you
like that crunchy.
Okay,
it's textured.
Granular.
And we have smoked sea salts. We have Hawaiian red clay sea salt. So there are different salts. Don't get me wrong.
But you don't need to crack it.
But you don't really need to crack it.
Yeah, I think so. I am going to say that not all salts are the same. NaCl is a chemical compound. There are salts that are manufactured in labs that are very, you know, those are the ones that we see a lot. The iodized salt, the table salt,
it's
kosher.
Like a lab-grown diamond.
Yeah, it's a lab-grown diamond, honestly. You know, and I've been to spice markets like in New York City, Calustians.
Yeah.
Right? There were easily 250 different varieties of salt. So it's
pink,
like
Himalayan salt.
Oh, Antarctic sea salt. New Jersey sea salt.
So there might be different mineral compounds.
Yes. In
it. Not all. I take it back.
Now we're going to backtrack it. I love this.
I mean, like in our restaurants, we don't use iodized table salt.
Right.
But we use kosher salt or we use sea salt.
Okay.
Because of the minerality, there's flavor differences. But my point is like
a grinder
grinding
was the question.
Isn't really going to do that much. It's just going to affect the texture of the grain.
Now, for my home kitchen,
I
would like to move to herbs here because for me, I just having fresh herbs makes a big difference, but they're also difficult to keep on hand. So dried herbs seem to be the easy go-to, and whether or not they ever get too old to continue to use, I've got some things on my spice rack that I think are about as old as me. So I'm curious.
We all do.
Okay, good to know. That makes me feel better about my age. But you know, how do you keep your herbs fresh? When do you go to dried herbs, and when are they too dry to use anymore? Well, Chef Luke, I'll start with you.
Oh, gosh.
Go for it.
Well, herbs, I prefer them fresh most of the time, right? Yeah. So that's one of those staples that I'll go to if it's the local food co-op or the grocery store or wherever I'm picking up ingredients for something that I'm going to make. Like you can't replace that really fresh, you know, pop of fresh herbs, whatever that looks like. If it's parsley, if it's chives, if it's thyme, if it's rosemary. Some of the like classic cooking herbs like dried rosemary, dried thyme, dried oregano, they have different pungencies when they're dried, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like it's kind of a little bit of an exercise. Like dried basil is not nearly as aromatic and beautiful as fresh basil. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I don't know that I've ever seen dried cilantro. Maybe I have.
I have
it's
actually.
Out there.
Yeah, but it doesn't taste like cilantro.
Yeah. Right, right. Mm-hmm. You know, dried rosemary, sure. Dried thyme, I'm real sketchy on that one. But, you know, like if I'm at home on a Sunday and I'm preparing food and I'm like, well, I didn't make it to the market to grab those, you're going to get a much different flavor profile. And that's not to say it's bad, but you'll want to keep tasting as you prepare your dishes because it's going to be a little bit nuanced.
Yeah, I mean, I was strictly fresh herbs until I went into the dried herb business.
Until you went into the business.
But, you know, this is where the wife story comes back.
Ooh,
full circle. I have two of them. My ex-wife, Marsha.
One at a time.
My ex-wife, Marsha, is also a business partner, and my wife, Michelle. The three of us run these businesses, but through both of those marriages, we have struggled with trying to keep a rosemary plant alive year-round. We take them in, take them out in the winter. I don't know if we've ever made one. I think Marsha may have had one go through the winter and come back, because that's a dream, just to live somewhere where I can have a rosemary plant year-round.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely don't have that here.
Yeah. But back to the dried herbs, you know, like you said, it's about sourcing, finding really good. We do a lot of organic and direct from farmer sourcing. So we're finding stuff that has taught me a lot, blown my mind a little bit on what you can do with some dried herbs. But I think even in my cooking today, we do some herb blends, but I still combine it with fresh herbs.
When do they get too old to use?
You know, if you keep spice blends or herb blends in a dark cabinet or that drawer that we all have that has things from 5 years ago, they last about a year.
Okay.
And some of the bigger, I don't know, like you said, it was a law that we have to put cheese on our pie.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is really true, but it's a kind of understood in the industry that some of the really big players in the big supermarkets that you see everywhere, some of those blends have been in a storage facility for a while. Probably. It takes a while before they even get to your house.
Right.
So the things like we're doing, we're so boutique and so small that our things are done really fresh and turned over. And, you know, what our whole inventory was cleared out in the fourth quarter. Yeah. So everything we're doing is fresh.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd imagine it's sort of a taste test that you, if you can't taste your seasoning, then there's no point in having the seasoning on the shelf anymore.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your questions now at 1-800-642-1234, where Lois is standing by. Lois, good morning.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. Question for Patrick and Luke. And Lee, I think you're doing a wonderful job, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm attending an annual house party a friend gives yearly. For the Super Bowl, which I like the commercials anyway. and I always take the same boring thing, which is just I go and I buy, you know, from the seafood center, from someplace else, some fresh, nice shrimp and, you know, steam them up and then take a cocktail sauce with it. But I do that every year. This year I want to do something different. I want to do something special. Can you help?
Yeah.
Lois, thank you so much.
Oh, Halloran, you got to tee off on this.
Tee off on it? Well, now I'm at a loss.
What do you mean?
The first thing that came to mind was taco dip.
Seven-layer dip. Bring on the seven-layer dip.
I thought about taco pizza, but I have this rule that, like, I love tacos and I love pizza, but I don't like them together.
I don't either. I don't either, man. Some people, like Ruthie, my wife, she lives for taco pizza, specifically from Happy Joe's, which was like an old school chain.
My wife likes that. They have a sauerkraut pizza that she raves about.
Wow. but, you know, like for Lois, going in, you know, you want it to pop. You want it to pop. Lois, you want to know a hack that I'll share with you right now. Mm. One of the best appetizers that I've ever had the pleasure of making, and I've made it a few times on my own, but I learned it from the man, the myth, the legend sitting in the studio from me, curried bacon. Okay?
What?
So I think at the time we probably took Newski's bacon.
They just started following me on social media.
Did they really? Awesome. Wow. Look at you. You are the legend.
Well, you already can't lose.
Yeah, exactly. Or Jones Dairy Farm. I like that bacon as well. And so what Patrick did is he rubbed it down with brown sugar. Yeah. I remember a little bit of curry powder in there, toasted and ground cumin and coriander,
okay,
and then black pepper, telecherry peppercorns that we toasted and ground up. And we rubbed the bacon down, we put it on skewers, baked it. And, you know, this was probably, what, circa 2004, 2005 we ran this thing?
Yeah, a long time ago.
But it still slaps to this day, Lois. I mean, yeah, and most people, curried bacon, like bacon is a very low barrier for entry when it comes into the culinary world. Like most people are like, oh, bacon, or they don't eat bacon.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that for your Super Bowl party, you show up with 15, 20 skewers of curried bacon.
Maybe 25 or 30.
Maybe 25 or 30, says Lee. It's one of those that you can't really go wrong with.
But if she wants to stay in the shrimp lane.
Oh, good. Oh. Yeah, take her.
You can leave shrimp cocktail in the dust. You can poach those shrimp, and then you can marinate them. You could use Thai spices. You could use Indian spices. We have one, bomba, which is our southern Italian with toasted fennel and Calabrian chilies. You know, make something on a platter, like a chilled shrimp platter over a salad of crisp, crunchy vegetables, maybe. So you've kind of left the realm of the shrimp cocktail
that everybody knows. Yeah.
And kind of kicked it up just a notch.
Oh, look at you. Dude, you're going to get calls from Emerald's people.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Kick it up a notch.
Yeah.
I have an update on Wisconsin law, which somehow we've entered into.
Yes.
In this
yes.
There is evidently a 1935 law that was active for a few years that required restaurants to serve a small amount of cheese and butter with meals. While not specifically on apple pie, the law was designed to boost the dairy industry in Wisconsin and was often interpreted as encouragement for the traditional
traditional pairing. So,
sweet. Nice. I stand corrected.
You weren't wrong.
I wasn't wrong, but
you
I wasn't right,
right. either.
Yeah,
exactly. Like a good chef.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Welcome to Life in the Kitchen.
You threw a Hail Mary.
Yeah, you threw a Hail Mary at
another Brett
Favre
moment
yeah.
for our guest, right? Chef Luke Somm.
Antonio Freeman going down the sideline.
Lois, I hope you have a wonderful Super Bowl party and enjoy the bacon or the shrimp, whichever way you choose to go. We're also joined by Chef Patrick O'Halloran today, and you as well at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and coming up after noon, Sandra Katz joins us to talk about fermentation for the hour. We've got the expert with us, so we're hoping you'll bring your fermentation questions. With the time we have left in this hour, we're joined by Chef Patrick O'Halloran from The Deliciouser and Chef Luke Somm from Wisconsin Foodie and the Driftless Cafe in Viroqua, and you as well at 1-800-642-1234. We'll go to Kay next. Kay's in Madison, and Kay, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I've been, thanks to my mother, I've been cooking starting here in Madison since I was five. And here are my five. The first two are real serious health tips. Read your labels. Figure 4 to 5 grams of fat per serving. So, for instance, an ice cream can be 15 grams of fat in one serving. You're going to get very fat. I'm 77. I weigh what I did in college.
Whoa.
Secondly, potassium and salt offset each other. So if you're worried about your blood pressure, eat a banana. Number two, if you want to have a salt substitute, for instance, curry, chicken salad is very good.
Mm.
Third, if you're doing a pumpkin pie, 3 tablespoons of cinnamon, it's perfect. And sage and rosemary is a perfect, in a sauce, is a perfect French dressing. Or spices.
Sage and rosemary in a sauce?
Well, the way I figured it out, I went through my cookbook, kind of a new vogue. California. Because I had gone to this, I lived in New York for a long time, and we went to this French restaurant that had wild mushrooms and a ravioli with a cream sauce. And the cream sauce seemed so French, but I didn't know what was in it. And so I went through this French cookbook to look for any sauce that I had never used, and it was rosemary. And that wasn't quite the same taste, so I went back to Simon and Garfunkel, rosemary and wine. And it was the sage that gave it the French, so the sage and the rosemary.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I usually think of sage and stuffing more than anything else. Beyond that, I am always apprehensive to add it to anything.
Well, I wish Kay was in the studio with us.
Yeah, seriously.
We could learn a couple things.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And I can't think of a more Wisconsin public radio plug for Simon and Garfunkel than the parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. But she's not wrong.
Yeah.
You know, for folks at home, like a lot of those herbs, they play well with each other.
Yeah.
And you know, that's kind of the insider life hack with cooking with local fresh food. Most of the time, if it's grown in the same season, tomatoes and eggplant, right?
If it grows together, it goes together.
Grows together, goes together.
Beautiful.
And so those herbs, like they have a way of enhancing each other and like rounding out flavor profiles that maybe you didn't see coming. But
I think of that sage, rosemary, like Northern Italy.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than a pasta, like a ravioli, just with brown butter and sage.
Mm. But for Kay, it was French. For you, it was Italian. But for me, it's American.
Yeah. Well, sure. That's a much larger discussion. But yeah, no, I think so too. We are the flavors.
Now, we've talked about cooking for the family at home. We've talked about cooking for two for Valentine's Day. I want to talk about cooking for one, because this can be the ultimate liberation or just the microwave meal, depending on where you want to go with it and what you want to do. But if it's just you, Chef Patrick, what do you do when you've got the kitchen to yourself and a meal for just you?
For just me.
Yes.
Yesterday, I had the day off. The house alone, I microwaved nachos. So what I did, step by step, I took some spicy Doritos, the spicy ones, the spicy nacho, and then I put some Chihuahua cheese on there, and I put a little pepper jack and some pickled jalapenos in the microwave, 2 minutes, 22 seconds.
That's nice. Longer than I would have thought.
The deuce, deuce, deuce.
Yeah, and then I, this is my dream, take them to bed, pop on a good movie, And my wife hates this too.
Yeah, I bet she does.
All
dude.
I dream about at the end of a long shift is I want a pizza and I want to eat it in bed.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there, done that.
I remember when my mom used to leave the house and my dad was left for himself in the kitchen. It was something he called bagnacotta, which was anchovies,
oh, yeah,
garlic,
yeah. Awesome.
And olive oil. Mm-hmm. And it would stink up the house in a way that when my mom came back, she knew exactly what he'd made in the kitchen.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Think cooking for one, you want to cook something if you're going to have leftovers, right?
Yep.
Oh. So it's something that you can then reuse, repurpose. Mm-hmm. What would you do?
I do a lot of rice. Oh. Rice is so ubiquitous.
Oh, oh, oh.
And there are so many different ways that you can utilize it. Fun fact, I actually prefer the day old rice sometimes because if you're going to do the fried rice where you're going to bang out that leftover meal with the stuff that you've got left in the fridge, it's better. Once the starches have reset.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But, you know, like with rice, you can do so many different things. Obviously, it's a starch. It's fairly low in the glycemic index. So, you know, it's pretty good for you.
You just looked at me because you know I have diabetes.
It's livabetes, sir.
Livabetes. I want to live.
I want to live. But no, I like that rice, man, because you could do all sorts of stuff.
What sort of seasoning are you putting on it?
What sort of seasoning? I like to make mine with a little bit of coconut oil.
Oh.
You know, like get it in there, that coconut rice.
Oh.
I find like it lends itself to like, is this Indian? Is this Southeast Asian? Is this, you know, any tropical place? Is it Caribbean?
Yeah.
And you can really riff on that. But like having that one staple, so at least when I open up the fridge, I see this, well, I've got this. Okay, yeah. We can build from there.
I mean, we're putting a rice porridge on the menu starting Wednesday.
Oh,
I,
yeah.
I was a little under the weather a few weeks ago, and Dan O'Connor, our chef, sent me some rice porridge. So he just took that day-old rice, cooked it down into a porridge with brown butter and chicken stock.
Yeah.
And then we're going to do some trout roe, a jammy egg, some nori, and a togarashi or chili crisp over the top.
Oh, so you're keeping it real simple then for the folks at home.
So that's what I like. I like to provide simple recipes for people when I'm teaching them how to cook at home. But then when they come to the restaurant, I want them to see, like, what else can I do?
That's starting Wednesday at the Deliciouser in Madison.
Yeah.
But coming up tomorrow at the Deliciouser, you've got a fondue party.
Yeah, we're really thrilled to host Anna Landmark from Landmark Creamery.
Mm.
She's going to be providing the cheese and a little tutorial on fondues and fondant.
Oh my gosh. You couldn't help it, could you?
Yes. There it is.
So we're going to serve a nice lyonnaise salad with some of those Nooski bacon lardons and some garlic croutons. And then we're going to have a little spread with fondue. And then we're going to follow the fondue, we just thought, with cheesecake. Let's put more cheese in.
Sure. I mean, lean in. Yeah. Just lean in.
Is there any space available for anybody interested still?
I think there's still a few more spaces available for that. So,
all right.
It should be a nice evening. And, you know, we always have fun.
Also, some great ideas for Valentine's, because fondue to me is a little bit romantic.
That's
fondue
right.
For two. Another tip, I just heard a hot take for Valentine's Day.
What is it?
Don't buy flowers.
Yeah, okay.
Write a love letter.
Ooh.
Who writes letters anymore?
Oh.
Yeah, not so many folks.
Pulls
at
my heartstrings. That's beautiful.
Yeah, write a letter. I'll write you a letter.
I plagiarize that.
Let AI do it for
you. No, come on.
Chef Luke, I want to ask you about the new season of Wisconsin Foodie, which is coming right. It's right around the corner. And I want to say, you know, this is such a fun job to do and sit in for Larry every day. But man, your gig seems to be about the best there is in the media. You just get to go taste the best. You get to go see how it's made, from the Krispy Kreme donuts to the food to farm to table. I just have so much fun watching you, other than I'm very jealous.
Oh, thanks, man. It is. It's truly arguably the best job in the state of Wisconsin. You know, every place we get the privilege to visit, folks are always rolling out their A game.
Yeah.
And, you know, this season is no different. I'm really, really excited for the first episode that premieres this week. We taped this one over the course of 4 days in Milwaukee. It's the Kinship Cafe. And I think for those of you who followed it along with the Wisconsin Foodie Journey, this particular organization is a 501c3, but they have a cafe on Martin Luther King Boulevard. And they take folks who
I would just say, like, have been from really different backgrounds and circumstances, and they teach them the skills of working in a professional kitchen as one facet of the organization. The second, they have a 3-acre farm off of Port Washington Road where they produce 27,000 pounds of food a year.
Whoa.
And then it's harvested utilizing community volunteers and folks from the organization. And then they also have the River West Food Pantry where they distribute this produce to folks from all over the city. They have hot meals available for people when they come in. And it's this beautiful story of community and resilience and this idea that, you know, no one's coming to save us. Mm. And this is how we save ourselves. I believe with my whole heart, and if Wisconsin Foodie has told me anything, that, you know, we are a diverse landscape of human beings, but we all have this commonality in food, right?
It brings us together.
It brings us together. It provides a moment of connection where we can reflect and share. And maybe we don't always have the same ideas that guide us through life. But man, oh man, for 1 second when we sit down together and you can appreciate and say thank you for this meal. Thank you for growing this food. Thank you for preparing this food and bringing us all together. I promise you, that's the exact legacy that Fred Rogers was preaching my whole childhood, right?
Not just Fred Rogers, but you want to go with a PBS route. Also Bob Ross with paintings, but also Chef Patrick and Chef Luke with food.
Yeah. You always look for the helpers.
Always look for the helpers.
Yeah, but we, as we grow up, we become the helpers. We make that choice. So the Kinship Cafe in Milwaukee, featured in the premiere season, the new season of Wisconsin Foodie, coming up Thursday on PBS Wisconsin. Find out more at PBSWisconsin.org. And as a thank you to you two, or maybe a curse, I have brought you food today.
Oh, boy.
I made it myself. I'm curious what you think of it.
Oh, boy.
I know. I have two chefs in the kitchen are in the studio, and I decided to bring them some food.
Are you nervously?
Oh, so nervous.
Are you really?
This is a no-bake vegan date bar that I have brought for you because I don't usually do vegan and I love to bake. But when I saw this recipe, it is as simple as food processed oats and raw almonds. It is coconut oil, which you mentioned earlier that I love the taste of, and dates, which I fell in love with in Southern California. You put that all together in a bar, push it down, you know, put it in the fridge overnight. It was very simple. And I've been eating it for breakfast and dessert for the last 3 nights. So I thought I'd share it with you. So I don't have to have it for dessert again tonight. Also, I wanted to make sure you had some water nearby because it is very sweet.
It's delicious.
Yeah, it's very good.
But it's no sugar added. That's what I like about it, too. I think you can make the case it might even be healthy, as tasty as it is.
Yeah.
You got the dates in there, so they take that place of the sugar.
I love cooking with dates.
Yeah. That, hence his whole line for the Valentine's Day. He loves cooking with dates.
Well,
dates and dates and dates. Is this what you're going to make on Valentine's Day?
Like, I just made it for you guys. I can't.
I feel like I'm just surrounded by love.
But you've got a chocolate event coming up at the Deliciouser, too. I'm curious, do you put cheese in your chocolate?
That's a great idea.
I did not think so when I said it out loud. No.
Michelle Mao, our pastry chef, will be leading her annual truffle workshop on Valentine's Day during the day. So that one always sells out. People get to make their own truffles, kind of roll them and take them home. So it's a good thing for couples. And Michelle does a great job with that one. A cheese and truffles. That might be good.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some cheeses that could work. I haven't heard you even talk about the crystallization in cheddar yet.
Oh, you want the full thing? No.
Yeah. We've got about a minute.
Yeah, exactly. So. Well, let me tell you about it. No, I want to say thank you, Lee, for this delectable snack.
I want to thank you both for coming in the studio. And again, it's the food that brings us together. And it's my way of showing my love for you guys and doing this with us and teaching me a thing or two about what I can take back to my family and my kitchen as we go forward here, and whether it's we're cooking for the whole family or just a romantic dinner or just for yourself.
Can I just make the suggestion? The next time Patrick and I come back, we have this long unfulfilled fantasy of being able to prepare food. Once upon a time, it was in a movie theater. Who can bring in the most elaborate and do this?
We're going to sneak food in and prepare a meal.
I want in on this sneaky food in here.
Well, we're going to do it actually in this studio.
Let's do it for Larry Mueller. We'll find a day where we can sneak you guys in a whole buffet table and some hot plates and everything else.
We'll cook a little dinner. We'll whip something up.
We actually have a big studio that, and of course our executive producer.
Yeah, exactly.
She's pointing at herself like, what about me? We've got a spread for everybody here. And we've got a big studio, Buck Studio back there where you could bring
That'd be awesome.
Entire, both kitchens from the Driftless Cafe and the Deliciouser. Chef Patrick, Chef Luke, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you, Lee.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show.